Welcome to Food and Life Freedom, the podcast that helps you heal your relationship with food and body. Today, we are exploring health. What does it really mean to be healthy? Is health a personal responsibility? And how much impact does diet and exercise really have on our health? I'm Emma Townsend, a UK registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counselor. I support clients to stop stressing over food rules and to naturally eat in a way that supports their body and mind. This episode is brought to you by Reclaiming Your Food Freedom, an online course that brings you all the tools and support you need for a healthy relationship with food and body. To learn more about how you can reclaim your food freedom, head to foodlifefreedom.com. This episode is an exploration from my personal perspective, looking into the current research and knowledge we have of what it really means to be healthy and how this differs from our common cultural perceptions of health. Of course, your thoughts about health may differ from mine, and that is okay. I'm not providing personalized health advice. We are all unique. If you have any health concerns, please seek the personalized support you deserve from a registered healthcare provider. So let's dive straight into this episode. What does it really mean to be healthy? The World Health Organization definition of health is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. So what comes up for you when you consider this definition? For me, firstly, I would be surprised if there could really ever be a single person in the world who meets this definition to be completely quote unquote healthy, to be not only free of physical disease, but with complete mental and social well-being seems just not really human. We are emotional beings and have very complex bodies and social environments. And as such, it's really normal to not have complete well-being or health in all these areas at all times. What constitutes complete well-being for one person may also be different to that for another person. So many health measures, especially mental and social, are dependent on a person's, say, individual need for socialization or an individual's emotional capacity. And what one person deems not harmful to their well-being, another may be impacted and feel this affects their mental or social well-being, for example. So health, especially mental and social health, is quite subjective in many ways. And maybe this is why our world has such a strong focus on physical health rather than social and mental health. So our healthcare system and our diet culture, we spoke about diet culture in the previous episode, send messages that health is largely physical. When we hear comments like, "I just care about that person's health," it generally means their physical health, such as something we can measure like their blood pressure or an absence of a physical illness that we can measure and see on a scan. But with this focus, we often see health promotion having a negative impact on people's mental health, all in the disguise of just being worried about their health, aka physical health. But health is more than physical. We know stress, discrimination, and being disconnected from our bodies, which many health campaigns contribute to, actually worsen our mental health. And our mental health and our social health is all interconnected, and it then impacts back on our physical health, such as markers like our blood pressure. We are missing a big part of the picture from our cultural perspective of health. The World Health Organization also states, "The enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health is one of the fundamental rights of every human being, without distinction of race, religion, political belief, economic or social condition." So it's not clearly stated in this definition, but if we are saying that every human being has fundamental rights to the highest attainable health, then surely we mean humans in all body sizes too. But we constantly see that humans in larger body sizes are denied healthcare that is accessible and available to someone else in a smaller body. For example, IVF treatment, surgeries, drug treatments, often they have weight limits, and medical equipment is often not designed for all bodies. And then there's also the bias and stereotyping impacting people's experiences with their healthcare provider. We also know that racism still affects Black and other people of color's access to healthcare and quality of healthcare, such as some medical equipment not working as well on darker skin, assessments are designed for white Caucasian populations, and stereotypes also impact treatment. And economic disadvantage in healthcare is still a huge problem as well. We know the impact of weight stigma, racism, economic disadvantage, and more affect not only people's physical health, but also their mental and social health as well. We also know that some conditions that are blamed on weight, for example, are actually the result of weight discrimination in healthcare and society at large. On the ground level, the messages we are given about health often negatively stigmatize and directly and indirectly harm the health of certain groups of people. What we see in health promotion and healthcare settings really does not match this statement by the World Health Organization that the highest attainable healthcare is available to all people. Another statement by the World Health Organization is that governments have a responsibility for the health of their people, which can be fulfilled only by the provision of adequate health and social measures. Yet we are constantly made to believe that health, for the most part, is a personal responsibility. It is constantly put back on the population that it's our personal responsibility to choose to be healthy. Recently, there was yet another new study making headlines that quote-unquote obesity costs the NHS and healthcare system a lot of money. Research like this is perfect for putting the blame back on us as individuals and allows the government to not improve services that impact our health. I won't get into the study here, but this research is really pointless. We already know there's a correlation between body size and health outcomes. No one is denying this, and that is all the study showed. It didn't show if the cause for the increased cost or healthcare needs was directly related to weight. So what we don't know, and what this study had no interest in finding out, was why we see this correlation. Is it that higher body size causes an increased rate of poor health outcomes? Or is it merely a side effect of other things going on that cause poor health outcomes? There was no curiosity and desire to find out more to be able to then improve services. And when studies do control for other factors, such as weight stigma, poverty, race, and much more, the correlation we see here between weight and health outcomes largely disappears, which suggests that weight itself is not the problem. If this study wanted to improve the health of all people, it would focus on how we can make our world and healthcare systems more health promoting for all people. These types of studies seem to routinely come out every decade or so to put the blame back on us as individuals and usually push some new weight loss drug or weight loss surgery. And in this case, it was new weight loss drugs. But not only did these reports harm the mental and social health of people, especially those in larger bodies, it also takes responsibility off the governments to provide health promoting environments for all people that includes all body sizes. So we could just start with less weight shaming messaging and equal access to healthcare, regardless of body size. Of course, we all have some decisions we can make in our health choices. I'm not taking away any power that we have to improve our well-being, but how much is really down to our own choices and is therefore our personal responsibility? This is understandably not a straightforward question to answer. A healthcare design studio called GoInvo conducted a literature review from sources such as the World Health Organization, the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control, government health data, and medical journals. And they've updated their work based on feedback as well. So I'll add a link in the show notes. They have turned this really complex data into a pie chart of the different areas affecting health. So the five broad areas they've identified are genetics and biology, medical care, environment, social circumstances, and individual behaviors. What they found was that individual behavior accounted for about 36% of health determinants. And they state as well that positive changes to our individual behavior can reduce disease risk. So does that mean we can eat and exercise our way to a 36% reduction in health risk? Although we commonly see diet and exercise promoted as the way we can reduce our health risk, according to this review, diet and exercise make up only a part of this individual behavior. So individual behavior, according to the way this is grouped, also includes risk-related behaviors such as gun behavior, sexual activity, and motor vehicle behavior. It also includes psychological assets, which is things like conscientiousness level, self-efficacy, optimism, life satisfaction, and cognitive function in later life. And it includes negative mood and affects, such as our stress level, hopelessness level, anxiety level, and depression level. Then it also includes sleep patterns, physical activity, and diet patterns. So we can see that this 36% effect of our individual behavior on health risk is a lot more than what we eat and how we move. Also really interesting to me is our health and nutrition messages. They're so focused on what we eat and they lean towards food rules and food shame to promote quote unquote healthy eating. But we know that following food rules and fearing foods worsens our mental health, leading to things like increased stress and anxiety, worsening self-esteem, lower overall life satisfaction, and leads to poorer sleep. So we are worsening other areas of health just to try to improve one part of it, which generally does not even lead to long-term change in food behaviors. Intuitive eating is often criticized because with intuitive eating, we are not placing rules on what to eat, and it is feared that people will just eat low nutritious food. We don't actually see this. But also, intuitive eaters are shown to have lower levels of anxiety and hopelessness and increased levels of self-efficacy, optimism, and life satisfaction, which are all in this same category under individual behavior as diet patterns and exercise, and they're just as important for health. This is not to say I don't believe nutrition and movement matters. Of course I do. I studied nutrition. I know it can have an impact on our health and well-being. But before any individual choice can come into nutrition, people need to have social environments that allow them choice in food and also prioritize mental and social health before being able to have capacity to use our food knowledge and food choice in a supportive way. So in summary, health is complex. Much of our health is actually out of our control. The idea that we can place any morality over health is absurd given the complexities and how little we really are in control of our health. Health goes so much deeper than what we see on the outside. Our cultural ideal has become about how we look or how we are seen to eat, but we can tell very, very little about someone's health or their behaviors from what we see. This stereotype of health is harmful, as it creates discrimination based on health ideals and also drives bias within the healthcare setting, impacting the healthcare we receive. Our cultural focus on diet and exercise promotes disordered eating, stressing over food, disconnecting from our bodies to follow external rules, attaining thinness at any cost, discrimination and oppression based on body size. And all of this leads to worsening of health in all these other areas. We did not see enough focus on the psychological and mood effects of health, as well as environmental and equality factors. There is so much more to health. And lastly, a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity, as the World Health Organization defines health, is not really achievable by anyone. But also, that's okay. As humans, we are not designed to be in a perfect state of complete health, physically, mentally, and socially. When health is moralized, it feels like we are pulling which bits of health fit our diet culture, such as physically looking healthy. But lifting each other up, being kind, being supportive is what improves people's health, not creating morality around health and then using this to shame people's bodies or food choices. We are still allowed to have health goals we work towards, but there's no right or wrong with what our goals are. And I hope that mental and social health becomes more normalized to work towards rather than just physical health. If you have gotten something from this episode, do hit follow to see upcoming episodes and reach out on Instagram at food.life.freedom to help more people eat without guilt and feel at peace in their body. Leave a 5-star review and share with your community by clicking the 3-dot symbol at the bottom of the episode. For show notes and references, head to foodlifefreedom.com/podcast. And to learn how you can get personalized support, head to foodlifefreedom.com. See you next week.